really going through something in these times now, you know? And I just hope to God that we get through it, you know? Through the truth I gain, my enemies can't stand to see the good succeed. I know they are so hard set with the lynch theory in full effect. Yeah. The passing of generations with the same mindset. It took some time to free my mind, and I give thanks to Jah all the time. Yeah. Five strings of righteousness, let the reasons be a teaching to the youthfulness. Yeah. And may Jah bless these songs of freedom now. Yeah. Bless them all on their way. Yeah. Bless them all on their way. Bless them all on their way.
CKLN 88.1, CKLN.FM online, Rogers Cable Box 947. This is your host, BK, a.k.a. Black Krishna. Apologize, having some slight technical difficulties here, so going to take you back to the reggae for a second. This is Journey of the Visionary by Wisegad, W-I-S-A-Y-G-A-D, a local Toronto artist I met last Saturday. You can reach them at myspace.com/YISAYGAD, House of God Records, GAD, and I'll shout out a bit more of them later. But back to the reggae for a second. I'll try and take care of a couple of things here in studio. Thanks so much.
Stand for rise up, your time has come. Been so long, they tried to keep us down. No more, no more. We can't take the crown. I said no more, no more. We've come to take the crown. Let's go.
Check. It's closest we'll have to do here on May 26, 2010. We will play Through the Pain. You are listening to CKLN Rude Awakening. This is your host, BK, a.k.a. Black Krishna. I do host the shows Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays from 6 to 7 a.m. Definitely try and break down the New World Order, the power elite, sung about in many ways by many artists like Wisegad. If I'm pronouncing that right. And again, this album is called Journey of the Visionary, Five Strings, Volume 1. And you can reach them at myspace.com/YSAYGOD, 416-705-6269. Now, why am I shouting out this dude? Is this a buddy of mine? Am I getting, straight-up radio payola kickbacks here at Community Radio to be broadcasting this on a beautiful sunny day in Toronto as of 6:14 a.m.? Well, the answer is no, not at all. It's not how I roll. I also almost never use a CD player, so apologize for that. But we'll have to be jumping back and forth to figure this out. Basically my colleague Brad and I were flyering the other day. We were flyering on Saturday. We were trying to get people hip to what's going on with the G20 and the unnecessary and excessive police state conditions that will be descending on Toronto in the next month or so. It's already started. There's already been reports from all over the place of black SUVs, private contractors, and all sorts of craziness as the military and police establishment drill for their, they basically drill for their big football game. This is what they train for, and they go and they face down a whole bunch of protesters on behalf of a whole bunch of evil and corrupt business people and politicians and banksters, and they basically defend them. The whole thing's insane. The whole thing's completely insane. If you want to play hockey with me, that's cool. Let's play hockey. But if you bring a stick and I don't, then who the hell do you expect to win? not that I actually want to be in an armed confrontation with anybody or a confrontation with anybody, period. But just the logistics of 10,000 police and military here in the city of Toronto just sort of locking things down while being prepared to challenge anybody who's protesting the G20, and of course potentially violent protesters, some organically inclined because they're self-indulgent whack jobs who have no understanding of how to affect political change, and some of them provocateur, like the provocateurs of the famous anti-WTO riots in Seattle, 15 years ago, and the ones in Montebello, Quebec, in August of 2006, I believe, in Montebello, Quebec, when there were protests against the SPP.gov. North American Union meeting that was being held there. Three cops were basically exposed as being cops by a union leader, and the guy was saying, "This is our line. Back off," because when you're lining up against police officers in this type of scenario, then people usually at leaders at the front protect the line to make sure nobody provokes the cops unnecessarily. And they keep their people in line so that, you stand face to face with them, but you don't do anything stupid that gets the rest of you, hurt or killed. And so these three guys showed up and dressed like skinny, underfed, anarchists, but with just big, muscly guys, like looked like they worked out way too much to be teenage anarchists. And they were caught, and the union leader said, "Put your rocks down, put those rocks down, take your masks off." And those three guys, all masked and all, pretty sizable guys, big cop forearms, kind of huddled a little closer together. A bunch of the other anarchists there, for a local Quebec anarchist, because this took place in Montebello, Quebec, were screaming, "Policier, policier, policier," pointing at the three of them who, clearly, didn't come with the anarchists yelling at them. And then those three dove behind the green police line of, cops clad, dressed like stormtroopers in 40 pounds of riot gear. And they jumped behind that police line and were taken to the ground. And as they were taken to the ground and handcuffed with their hands behind their backs, their shoes were sticking up. And the boots they were wearing were the exact same as the boots of the officers arresting them. So a bit of an embarrassment for the Sûreté de Québec. You can see a lot of this in the movie The Nation's Deathbed from PressForTruth.ca, directed by Steve Davies and Dan Dix from PressForTruth.ca. You can go there to find a link. You can find it online. You can also just Google Montebello, Quebec provocateur, and pop up articles from the CBC, Toronto Star, and so on. At first, the first articles were mainly speculation. The next articles were confirming the Sûreté de Quebec did in fact say, yes, we did infiltrate this protest, and yes, it is standard police procedure. In fact, I'm gonna break that out right now just to show you how they treated this. CBC, Montebello, provocateur. Give me my document cam, otherwise they won't believe me. To quote Alex Jones on his own show here. CBC.ca. Undercover cops tried to incite violence in Montebello, says union leader. So this is one of the early articles here saying that. And the first thing they says here is a classic article from, and the video is titled "Stop SPP Protest, Union Leader Stops Provocateurs," posted on YouTube. This was in August of 2007. And in footage filmed Monday afternoon, three burly men with bandanas and other covers over their faces pushed through protesters towards a line of riot police. One of the men has a rock in his hand. And this is, again, the CBC writing. This is CBC News from August 22nd, 2007. And it says, quote, "The Communications, Energy, and Paper Workers Union believes that the security force in Montebello were ordered to infiltrate our peaceful assembly and to provoke incidents," Coles told reporters. "I think the evidence that we've shown you today reinforces the view." Coles showed photographs of the masked men's and police officers' boots taken during the handcuffing, in which they appear to have identical tread patterns on their soles. And the CBC was even kind enough to put up a picture of this on their website. Again, This is why I don't just dog the mass media. Although I did have a City TV journalist crack on me yesterday. I happened to pass by Old City Hall at Bay and Queen, and there was a big press scrum there, so I wandered up with my camera and tried to figure out what was going on. And there's a hit and run by a famous counselor. Tons and tons and tons of media there. I'm, you know, semi-interested in this. There's enough press coverage there for me to not really care that much. But I'm covering the coverage of it. And then I eventually walked up to the two gentlemen, older white guys dressed in suits who looked like lawyers. And I tried to say, hey, excuse me, is there a, you know, I'm from CKLN Radio. Is there? And then the City TV cameraman guy, youngish dude, long hair, white dude. I got this on video. Says that, oh yeah, don't listen to him. He's nobody. He's just he's a troublemaker. And he was kind of like saying it in a sarcastic, joking way. I kept my cool and I just kind of, you know, let him finish that little statement and wander away. And then I went around them and I talked to another lawyer dude. I asked him, is there a press release for this? He goes, no, but there's an executive summary of the proceedings at the trial where we believe that the individual who's participating in this hit and run is, you know, isn't guilty. So I got a copy of that, you know, a few pages long, 8.5 by 11, and was briefly perusing it. A lot of legal mumbo jumbo. I have to go through it a bit more carefully. But anyway, that was, you know, that was it. But otherwise, a lot of them do great work, and they do the best they can in those positions, like many people, many other activists, and so on. So when I take shots at you know, certain industries and so on, and you know, especially with the police, I maintain, you know, I shot the sheriff. But it's a general philosophical principle. Most people I know are nice, regardless of where they work. And so if they happen to work, I got a friend's a wife who works promoting cancer and the Canadian Cancer Society. I think she works there somehow. And the bottom line is, I'm totally against that. I'm totally against the Canadian Cancer Society and these people trying to make money for big drug companies that haven't come close to curing cancer, that have only resulted in a world where there's increased cases of cancer. I hate all that. And yet, at the same time, you know, I got to sympathize with, you know, the way we've been told to understand the world. This is an early article on this, and it says here, meanwhile, a retired police officer was formerly in charge of overseeing demonstration for Forest City questions who the masked men really are after viewing the video. Quote, were they legitimate protesters? I don't think so, said Doug Kirkland. Quote, well, if they weren't police, I think they might well have been working in the best interest of police. And then he said, the situation was, as it appeared, he did not approve of the tactic. It's pretty close to baiting, he said. And so, again, this was all reported by the CBC before finally, you know, it was actually admitted. And again, here's another article from the CBC. Quebec police admit they went undercover at Montebello protest from August 24th from the CBC. So a couple of days later, the Sûreté Quebec came out and admitted that, in fact, was them. Now, what does that mean for us here in Toronto? What does that mean for people worldwide? Well, we can see and what's going on in Jamaica recently and with the state of emergency there as Obama's ordering of demanding the arrest of the Robin Hood drug lord there. And so in a nutshell, as it was mentioned to me yesterday, I said, yep. Yeah, yesterday it was Jamaica. You know, a week ago it was Thailand. The week before that it was Greece. Last year it was Burma. They're basically slow roasting us with our media with respect to what we can expect and how we can expect the world to descend into chaos by showing us all these examples from around the world. And make no mistake about it, folks, we're not interested in or we're not immune from that here. We are also under similar IMF rules, and the global banking dictatorship that's being set up is essentially being set up under the rules of the International Monetary Fund. So because Toronto has a great Jamaican population, and because there are obviously people who are going to be very, very concerned about this, I would like to break down right now over some reggae by Why Say God, Journey of the Visionary album, local Toronto artist. I'd like to break down from Kurt Nimmo what he thinks is going on in Jamaica, based on news reports and, of course, the InfoWars team's overall analysis abilities. So from May 25th, 2010, by Kurt Nimmo, InfoWars.com. Jamaican security forces searched a volatile Kingston slum for an alleged drug lord on Tuesday after at least seven people died in violence triggered by government orders to extradite him to the United States, reports Reuters. Heavily armed soldiers and police went door-to-door in the hunt for Christopher Dudas Koch, in the Tivoli Gardens neighborhood of West Kingston. United States says Coke is one of the world's most dangerous criminals, responsible for trafficking cannabis and crack cocaine around the Caribbean, North America, and the UK in exchange for guns and money, according to The Guardian. Prior to the Obama administration leaning on Jamaica's PM Bruce Golding and his Labour Party, Coke enjoyed substantial protection from the government. Feds in the U.S. unveiled charges against Coke last August and accused him of selling marijuana and cocaine in New York and elsewhere and arming his associates with illegally trafficked weapons. The Justice Department lists Coke among the, quote, world's most dangerous narcotics kingpins. And somebody did mention this to me yesterday, and I mentioned back to them. I said this is the exact same situation that's going on in Afghanistan, where our puppet leader, because you know, with all due respect to Mr. Gold, Mr. Golding, Jamaica's PM Bruce Golding, if the Anglo-American establishment, the British and Americans, and other leaders of the New World Order didn't want Mr. Golding to be Prime Minister of Jamaica, he wouldn't. And if they didn't want him to have that relationship with this drug dealer and support it, then they wouldn't. And if they didn't want to destabilize the whole thing by suddenly making him a target, then they wouldn't. And so you'll see the same thing happening in Afghanistan, by the way. This is problem, reaction, solution, where you have the Afghani puppet president, Hamid Karzai, and then his, who's again, the puppet president of Afghanistan, doesn't have much control, can't leave Kabul, you know, very often, apparently, because, again, Afghanistan is still run by warlords. But he does have a lot of influence, and to make sure he's got some backup, he's got one of the biggest warlords and drug dealers in Afghanistan, his brother, I believe Walid Karzai, doing basically the same thing. So you got government-supported drug dealing in Jamaica, government-supported drug dealing in Afghanistan, and both governments supported by Western powers. So back to the article. And again, the same thing will happen in Afghanistan. They'll say, the opium trade's getting out of hand here. There's too much opium hitting our streets and our kids are all screwed. So we got to launch a new offensive against Afghanistan. And that'll keep going when, in fact, they were behind this. Problem, reaction, solution technique. So back to the article here. It turns out arresting Coke will be no easy matter. Gang members attacked police stations in and around Kingston as it became clear Coke was a wanted man. In response, the Prime Minister put troops on the streets and declared a state of emergency in Tivoli Gardens, the West Kingston neighborhood, or garrison loyal to Mr. Coke, who's commonly known as Dudas, and his Sour Posse gang, reports New York Times. It is the sort of one-dimensional story that corporate media loves, a drug-dealing bad guy and his armed supporters fighting against a noble government determined to bring him to justice. As usual, the corporate media only tells one side of the story. Quote, for many in Kingston slums, Dudas is a much better provider of political goods, education, security, and food than the state, which translates into the popular support he gets locally, writes John Robb for Global Guerrillas. Quote, to the poor residents of West Kingston, Coke is a benefactor who distributes cash, food, and scholarships. They call him Dudas and vow to die for him, adds the New York Daily News. Dudas is a benefactor, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm just doing my best here. I don't want to say Dud-us. Anyway, Dudas is a benefactor to many persons who depend on him to send their children to school, buy food, and most important, settle disputes beyond Jamaican borders, notes the Jamaica Gleaner. So he's actually an international diplomat in the Caribbean, this guy, because the governments are corrupt. And here's the reason why. Nearly 20% of the Jamaican population lives in abject poverty, while close to 6% live on less than $2 a day. The working poor earn an average of $50 a week if they are lucky. Quote, the government, which spends 40% of the country's gross national product to pay Jamaica's external debt, doesn't really make a difference in the lives of the poor who have to depend on charity to survive, writes the Western Catholic Reporter. And that's where the IMF comes in, folks. There's an amazing movie that's going to be referenced later in this article by Stephanie Black called Life and Debt. Fantastic movie, brilliant soundtrack. Buy it, rent it. I got it at Suspect Video before that whole block was burned down at Queen and Bathurst in very suspicious circumstances that really, really ticked me off. But anyway, the point is that in that movie it showed an example of what the IMF does, including a part of the IMF loans being given to Jamaica to force them to buy chicken from one of the major chicken farms in the U.S., Purdue, I believe, or something. And so they got this big boatload of chicken, and they took a look at the chicken, and it was 25 years old. It was 25-year-old rotting chicken that was in the back of a freezer warehouse somewhere. And this company, Perduda, didn't want to pay the few thousand dollars or whatever to, or several hundred thousand dollars, who knows, to safely get rid of it, managed to get IMF money that was loaned to Jamaica, managed to get Jamaica to spend that money on it with their company in exchange for shipping it over to Jamaica, and now letting Jamaica probably use more IMF loans to pay to get rid of it safely. So again, that's the type of scams that have been pulled. And back to the article here. Former Prime Minister Michael Manley was elected on a non-IMF platform in 1976, but was subsequently forced into Jamaica's first loan shark agreement with the IMF in 1977. In 2001, Jamaica owed over $4.5 billion to the IMF, the World Bank, and the Interaction Development Bank, among other, quote, international lending agencies, i.e. the international banksters. Quote, we are seeking to get U.S. $1.2 billion from the IMF, and it is not a panacea. That is, U.S. $1.2 billion is going to stop at the Bank of Jamaica. Not one penny of that is going to go to the Ministry of Finance. That's the nature of IMF arrangements, PM Bruce Golding declared last December. In other words, poverty will continue in Jamaica and will likely get worse. And it says here, the country is paying out increasingly more than it receives in total financial resources, and if benchmark conditionalities are met, the structural adjustment program is made more stringent with each renegotiation, explains filmmaker Stephanie Black and Life and Debt, a documentary about IMF and post-poverty in Jamaica. And it says, see a clip from the film below. Before we do that, here's a quote. To improve balance of payments devaluation, which raises the cost of foreign exchange, high interest rates, which raise the cost of credit, and wage guidelines, which effectively reduce the price of local labor, are prescribed. So, again, in my populist speak, basically the IMF insists that you create conditions that will screw you anyway. And on and on. So let's go to a clip of Life and Debt. It's about a 3-minute clip here, the IMF decimating one country after another.
Putting fluoride in your water, folks, because they care about you, okay? They like attacking every organ in your...
First of all, you go to the private banking system. And you say, well, can I get a private banking loan? Because I'm strapped for cash and need some support, and I'm having trouble paying my overseas bills.
When the private banks won't lend to you, then you've got to do something if you're leader of a country. And typically what you've got to do is to cut back your spending in some way and try and get more money so that the impact of those cutbacks are not as severe as they otherwise would be. And it's at that point that you generally come to the IMF.
What you really need is to sit down with them and say, look, can I work out a 5-year program? And in the meantime, I'm strapped for some cash, so can you help me up front get out of the cash bind and then put it in the context of a long-term development plan? And they said, no, long-term development is your problem. We are here only to see who do you owe the money to, why are you in a bind, and we'll lend you some money in a very short time frame at full interest rate to get you out of the bind. And they then impose upon you tremendous restrictions in what you can spend.
And then we reach agreement on a set of measures on the budget, on the exchange rate, on monetary policy, on interest rates, on banks, on maybe privatization, and say, yep, we think this could solve your problem.
And you say to them, but if I do it that way, when I finish repaying you, I'm going to be in the bind all over because this can't solve my problem. They said, not our problem.
The whole idea was to set conditions which the government could not meet. And when the government failed to meet them, you would have to renegotiate a new loan in which the conditions became tighter. So the IMF didn't say, cut out this education program or cut out this health program. What the IMF said is, you must spend only so much money on health and education. And the implication of that was that you had to cut out some programs.
Essentially, what the IMF wanted us to do was to devalue our currency. That's the first thing, to make our dollar cheaper.
They needed to expand their exports and diminish their imports. And the best way of doing that is to make foreign currency more expensive.
And since our society is so heavily dependent on imported food, imported fuel, imported books to go to school, imported medicine, when we devalue, the cost of those things we import go up to the citizens. And as a result, the economy today is much more under the control of foreigners. Not necessarily through direct ownership, but through the mechanism of debt. In the 1970s, we owed $800 million. By the end of the 1980s, we owed $4 billion. Nowadays, we owe $7 billion. So the debt is rising, and all the time the debt is rising, our capacity to export to produce is getting less.
And that's right, folks. That was a clip from the film Life and Debt. D-E-B-T. Definitely got to check out that film if you do want to know what's going on in Jamaica. Because, we've been sold since Miami Vice, TV show from the 80s, to go way, way back with Crockett and Tubbs, as Edward James Olmos would say. But, the point is that we've been sold this, and so it's easy for us to fit into these archetypes, just like with the War on Terror. Remember the film True Lies with Arnold Schwarzenegger? Remember all those films in the 80s with all the evil terrorists? Well, the reason that we fall for these scams so easily and the mass media's depiction of what's going on is because we are indoctrinated on a bajillion different levels to appreciate this. Now, as somebody who studies, indoctrination, while at the same time trying to be conscious of my own, I'm a fan of other people that do it well, and one of the people that does it the best in the world is Mr. Alex Jones from the InfoWars team. And people sometimes will say, well, you play a lot of Jones stuff. And it's like, well, look, Jones, if you go to InfoWars, you're going to get a lot. If I give you some esoteric person that writes, one book a year or whatever, and I really, really try and get esoteric with it, then I won't be directing enough, hopefully, new people listening to the show to places where they can get consistent info, catch up quick, and start to take action, because things are starting to hit the fan around here. The news of things hitting the fan worldwide is just to get us used to the idea that a fan is about to get whacked in this part of the world. So do keep that in mind. But how is our government? How is our media treating us? Aside from the good people that work in there that do the best they can, as a whole, as entities run by the New World Order, what are their agendas? How do they push them? How do they work with product placement in mainstream TV shows to condition your minds to think that, patriots are this, or people who question vaccines are evil, and so on. I'm going to let Alex Jones from the 25th of May break down a little bit of propaganda from the film Dr. Strangelove in the 1960s to CSI today.
Oh, the trillions we've taken, over 28 trillion, haven't gotten new numbers in 5 months. I'm sure it's 35 trillion now, but we've taken 28 trillion, and we're not going to tell you where it went, and we've taken a trillion plus the last 2 weeks in Europe, and we won't tell you where that went. And we are training the clergy to tell their flocks it's of the Lord to go to the camp. Oh, we are training the preachers to tell their flocks to take the inoculations and go to the camps, but still, it's a conspiracy theory that camps are being built. It's just in the Houston Chronicle and the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal that Halliburton, just in one contract, got 3 1-million-man camp contracts. Doesn't matter if they're publicly training in riot suppression and door-to-door gun confiscation and door-to-door cordoning of neighborhoods to arrest people in the new watch list, and they're openly announcing it. No, they announce it all. This is a military psyop. They announce they're doing it and then say, I've got this CSI clip.
Steve Watson wrote an article about it. I'm going to play it later in the next hour when we go live at PrisonPlanet.tv. And remember, we're not even monitoring television. Here's an example. I turn on any television program on big ABC, CBS, NBC, or Fox. Any fiction program, and it is 100% brainwashing and conditioning. Anti-family, pro-inoculation, pro-martial law, pro-warrantless wiretapping, pro-warrantless SWAT teams. Everyone is guilty. Everyone deserves to be tortured. Torturing children is good. All the big movies coming out, unthinkable, you know, torturing people's children, cutting off their fingers. And in the real world, that's going on at black sites all over the planet. But then I just see an article that Steve Watson wrote, and you watch the television clips, and it's a professor who believes, get this, in chemtrails, and that water fluoridation is bad for you. And so the police go, look at this un-American piece of filth. He believes fluoride's bad. And they just go, oh, can you believe it? Now imagine how creepy that is. To have national government-funded, that's now admitted, behavior placement's what they call it. I call it propaganda placement. Government-paid-for messages where the police look at what the professor's teaching in class, and they say, ooh, he's gotten in trouble as a professor for teaching his students things like this. And he goes, water fluoridation? And the cop goes, this guy is so un-American. So the message is, if you don't like being forcibly medicated with a chemical that has a skull and crossbones on the bag and says causes organ failure and cancer and is a cumulative toxin, that's why they do it, none of it leaves your body. Almost all of it stays in you. And these people are so evil that now all these weak-minded jellyfish who don't talk to their neighbors, don't talk to their kids, they get home at 6 o'clock, they put an MSG, aspartame, oh yeah, it's in most of the food now, chemical weapon-laced, microwavable frankenfood that's got sterilants in it, on record, the GMO, in every case, is designed to sterilize you. They pop it in the microwave, go over, turn on the television set, and then you have every program, every fiction program, jam-packed with brainwashing. And in this particular piece, of course the professor turns out trying to chemical weapon attack an entire building. He is a terrorist. Of course, it turns out that anyone who's against water fluoridation is a terrorist that wants to murder you and your family. Now think about the psychology there. All these scientists, the head toxicologist for the EPA, we've had him on, testified before Congress. Over 90% of the EPA scientists send letters to their own agency saying, this is deadly poison killing the people. It's a cumulative toxin. It's a toxic waste. We need to take sodium fluoride out of the water and all these other chemicals that they put in on design. By design, it's not by accident. Now, the people that watch shows like CSI the message is, you're anti-American. Water fluoridation, he's criticizing that. How un-American. And, of course, the bigger issue here is how dumb does the establishment think you are? I mean, how obvious where the villain believes water fluoridation is bad. I mean, these actors know full well what they're doing. They're mercenaries. I think the actor's name's Gary Sinise, the one who plays the part. I don't know. I don't watch CSI. But it's you are bathed in pure brainwashing. I mean, that's an evil government. That's an evil media.
It's all covert. It's all illegal. They've got CENTCOM all over the web attacking myself and others. They've got the FCC saying they're going to take over the internet and shut down free speech. You've got every major White House czar saying it. You've got the Republicans going along with it. I mean, we're in trouble, folks. And they've got all these women shows. And my wife goes and shows me clips of them where the mother that doesn't want to inoculate is a murderer and abuses her child. Or the woman who wants to keep her information private is a terrorist. Or the woman that doesn't want to abort her baby is a piece of trash. It's just, you're bathed in it. But the good news is the public's waking up to this. And so the system goes, all right, activate Kim Jong-il. We gave him nukes. Tell him to go completely ape and we'll give him some more money. All right, get Israel ready to bomb Iran. We'll start World War III. And remember in all of this, those of you that psychologically think you can make a choice to serve the system, I think the New World Order is big and scary. I think I'll just join it psychologically, you know, psychological level. I'll just rationalize and go ahead and go along with it. You're going to get smashed flatter than a pancake. Okay, do you understand that? You are not part of the power structure. You're not part of the winning team. Cops, bureaucrats, firemen, preachers, lawyers, politicians, mid-level corporate people, mercenaries. Now, a lot of you mercenaries know that. You're just scared. You've been inside the system. You know how evil it is. You've shipped in the narcotics. You've laundered the money. You've run the DynCorp child kidnapping operations when 500-plus children are being loaded onto those jets on those Eastern European tarmacs, many of them for snuff films. You understand the black-hearted hell pit that's been opened. But just remember, ladies and gentlemen, that we've got to get the message out to people. That they're so scared of us that they have villains in show after show who want to poison the water supply, but they're teaching their kids in college, their students, that sodium fluoride's bad in the water. See the double thing? It's just like when they accuse 9/11 truthers of working for Al-Qaeda and claim that we're going to stage terror attacks and all these talking points. You understand? It's like saying Santa Claus is the Grinch or Batman is the Joker. It's upside down. It's like saying Jesus is Satan. We're the groups openly exposing the terrorists, so they come out and say, no, you're the ones planning to blow stuff up. Or they say, oh, yeah, anybody warning you about fluoride, they're a terrorist. Well, remember Jack T. Ripper in Dr. Strangelove, the Stanley Kubrick film? He's going to nuke the world. He's going to start World War III because he doesn't like sodium fluoride in the water. It's the same talking point. It's the same thing with doctors that do studies that show that there's an autism increase from vaccination. No kidding. We've gone from, what, an average of 6 vaccines 40 years ago to over 55 vaccines by 18 months? And we wonder why we've gone from 1 in 25,000 to 1 in 68? I mean, when I was in high school, the special ed was one room, and I was in a big 4A high school. Now it's entire wings. I go to the park, and there's autistic kids running around moaning and bumping into things, poor things everywhere. I take my kids to a movie. 2-3 rows will be filled with autistic children. Their brains savaged. And what does mercury do? What does mercury poisoning do? They knew 150 years ago because they had child laborers that worked in the tanning factories where they used mercury to tan leather. And by 150 years ago, the British had already done studies and pulled the kids out of the tanneries because it made them basically start drooling in the corner. Oh, shut up, Dan Harris and all the rest of you. You make me want to throw up. We know mercury's rotting our children's brains. Oh, make me sick. And by the way, I'll never forget having the Deputy Attorney General on from Maryland. Remember having him on 4 years ago?
And we're back, CKLN listeners. Mr. Jones is just about to say he had a Deputy Attorney General on from Maryland on his show, a black deputy, really nice enough to be on the show. And he said himself, I think the shots are bad. Me and my kids don't take them. My family doesn't take them. And Jones says, but you don't tell the people in the state of Maryland, where you're basically enforcing a mandatory vaccination policy that doesn't exist, because it's illegal to make it mandatory. But, you know, schools say it's compulsory or your kid can't come to school. And so the guy in charge of enforcing that, the deputy district attorney of Maryland, said that his own family doesn't take the shot. And yet he, as part of the bureaucracy, does try and push the shot on other people in Maryland without warning them of the risk. So it's that type of hypocrisy that that Jones does call out, as well as the idea of vaccines in general. I have a clip from Dr. Andrew Wakefield on vaccines I'd like to try and get to if I can. But to finish up on the article about the press scrum that took place outside Old City Hall yesterday at Bay and Queen, I'm at thestar.com, the Toronto Star. Rosie D'Amato, the 28 seconds that changed Michael Bryant's life. Quote, "What I'll never forget is the unnecessary tragedy of that night," said the former attorney general. Because I asked a cameraman there. The camera guys are usually really friendly. The reporters, a lot of them know who I am, and some of them like me, some of them don't. But in a giant press scrum like that, I don't think they're going to necessarily want to identify themselves. But the camera guys are always cool because they got nothing. You know, they're just hanging out. And the guy talks and said, "Yeah, I'm just a camera guy. I didn't research this a lot. I just shoot whatever I come out here to shoot." But he did mention it was a high-profile guy. So here's the article by Rosie D'Amato from The Star. "Live by rage, die from rage. Darcy Allen Shepard was a chaotic hothead consumed by demons from his awful past. But it was the devil inside him on the night of August 31st, 2009 that caused his death, not the man who was once Ontario's Attorney General. Michael Bryant was merely the hapless vehicle of fate, unfolding on a hot summer's night when all the stars aligned so tragically. Deranged cyclist meets car. Car bumps infuriated cyclist. The cyclist was the provocateur. The driver was the terrified and disoriented wheelman. While no conclusive videotape exists of what happened in that confrontation, the deja vu of it, of Shepard's documented fury towards cars and motorists, was captured by an office worker with a camera in a nearby building during a previous and eerily similar altercation. Shepard, enraged, assaulted a driver only 3 weeks earlier, spitting on the car, jumping out of the vehicle, and hanging onto the window. Quote, the photographs clearly show Mr. Shepard angrily confronting the driver of the vehicle and at one point hanging onto the car with his hands inside the driver's window and his feet on the car's running board. Special prosecutor Richard Peck, a Vancouver lawyer brought in to handle the case, told a court Tuesday as he entered the photographs, see below as exhibits in a packed courtroom at Old City Hall. Shepard, a 33-year-old bike courier, may have been a sweet guy, as described by friends, with a humorous disposition, yet he was also a profoundly violent alcoholic with a criminal record that included two assaults and threatening to kill a cab driver while armed with imitation firearms. Most germane to this case, Shepard had been involved in 6 earlier duplicate incidents, 4 occurring last August, including one in which an elderly woman described him as a, quote, madman, and another earlier that night. So there it is. You can go to Ms. D'Amato for a bit more on that case. But I do want to get to this quick clip of Dr. Andrew Wakefield from the Alex Jones radio show talking about vaccines, because it's a hugely important issue.
They say the mercury is toxic, but it's really a side issue. They say it is the adjuvant effect of causing an autoimmune response that causes the miscarriages, that causes the autoimmune response in the intestines, the autoimmune response, the brain swelling. A lot of children have a convulsion in the car or at home after the shots. Then cops come and arrest them because there's blood on the brain. They say they've shaken the babies. You know, that's a whole other facet to this, doctor, isn't it? How they also persecute people when the soft kill weapon, MMR, really hits them hard. Then they say, oh, you must have beat your kid.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're absolutely right. There were cases in England where there were shaken baby syndrome, the child died, they had hemorrhages. The pathologists ought to say, look, this is something that could be consistent with the DTP vaccine that he's just had. They weren't allowed to talk about it. They were actually forbidden to talk about it in the courtroom. They couldn't address the vaccine issue. Now, if you can't bring the evidence into court, what kind of justice is that? And the parents are found guilty of having...
But that's even better. They get to brain damage the kid and then throw the parents in prison. This is a wonderful system for a predatory government. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I don't, you know, at the moment, I'm as a scientist and a doctor, I don't know whether, you know, to what extent this is just incompetence or conspiracy, but I do know there's a lot of damage out there that is going, that is being brushed under the carpet, and it's unacceptable. Kids in this country have never been, had so many chronic immune diseases, asthma, eczema, hay fever, the Crohn's disease, autism. What is going on? It's a key question. The one study they will not do is a comparison of vaccinated versus unvaccinated children, long-term health outcomes. And that, the reason they won't do that is of a real concern to me, because I think they suspect that it will show that the kids who've been vaccinated are worse off. Now, it may not, but do the study. The people deserve it. Parents have every right to expect that study not only should have been done in the past, but if not, must be done now as a matter of urgency. They don't want to do it.
Well, doctor, look, we've had decades of this info coming out. They know what it's doing. And so we could say in the past maybe it was just incompetence, but now the system clearly knows that vaccines are causing all sorts of problems. I mean, take Gardasil. In the trials, it caused death, but still they came out and aggressively pushed it. Can you speak to that? And then also the admission that these vaccines are now contaminated with pig viruses. And you have written on that subject.
Yeah, I can break it down. There are two things. I was at a meeting recently, Alex, with one of the speakers was one of the senior scientists involved in the production of the Gardasil vaccine. She was extremely concerned about the way it had been used, the rapidity with which it had been introduced in America. She said it was intended for women in third world countries or girls in third world countries who didn't have access to cervical smear screening, that there was no evidence that it worked and that it was associated with problems. The reason for introducing it seems to be entirely a commercial one. And having spoken to someone who worked at Merck, an insider, there were problems in the trial, as you've alluded to, from very early on. So, and I read the other day, it's just been withdrawn or suspended in India, where girls died after administration. So there's a problem. And please, the government cannot just ignore this. The recent debacle over the pig viruses in rotavirus vaccine. Again, this is a vaccine in England. No one uses rotavirus vaccine. Why is it necessary in the US? So we have a vaccine, and then after they say it's been extended. Journey to the city now. Man can't even trust his friend. I watch my back, can't trust my friend. Oh, the city.
And that's right, CKL and listeners, we are back. That was Dr. Andrew Wakefield from the Alex Jones Radio Show from the 25th of May, 2010. Definitely check out that clip. I will post these links at blackrish.blogspot.com, radioforall.net, archive.org, Podomatic, places where I do post these radio shows, copies radio shows at the end of, well, in the next couple of hours. So you see what's going on there, but the good news is tons and tons and tons of people are waking up. Dr. Wakefield worked with Jenny McCarthy, formerly dating Jim Carrey. She has an autistic son. Tried to help cure him, and you can go to generationrescue.org to learn how to detox from the effects of vaccines. And you might say, what, my kid's fine, and your kid could be fine, you know, sort of, you know, from the outside. But on the inside, they could have gastrointestinal issues if they are sickly or if they are, you know, poorly behaved after that. You may not know, it could be the result of their own body's immune systems reacting against the toxic effects of the vaccine. I happen to campaign manage for medical doctor Andrew Molden in October 2008 when he was running for a member of parliament in North Bay. And so I worked extensively and have researched extensively on this issue. And in talking to fellow veteran truthers, anti-New World Order activists, conspiracy theorists, whatever, I've asked them, because I've been working on solutions for years. I don't just want to learn the most horrible stuff going on in the world. I want to do something about it, and I know many other people do as well. I said, what's the issue? What's the most, you know, what's the best issue to get out to people? And One of them said, and a couple of people have echoed, it's vaccines. Because all of us are already suspicious of vaccines, and some of us, even if we believe in some vaccines, like we were traveling, for example, a lot of us don't take the flu shot because we believe that there is certainly some corruption there. Sorry about that. One second, please. No worries. Just helping Mr. Ron Gaskin blow a gasket in a sec as he spends 4 hours of funky music he likes to call jazz and much, much more. Before I go, though, to finish off on the vaccine issue, you can go to vran.org to find vaccine exemption forms. Again, perfectly legal. Take them to a notary. Get the notary to certify them, sign them, take them to the school, and then your kid does not have to take a vaccination, part of the 1997 School Immunizations Act. So there it is, and I'm just checking a couple of other things here from thestar.com. Warning, house prices are too high. So they're preparing to quickly pop the housing bubble here by saying to all you people who just dropped $350,000, I heard houses in Scarborough going for $400,000, $450,000, saying, oops, you overpaid. That's craziness. Summit security tab could top $900 million, according to the Star. On the Globe, at Globe Mail, security bill for G20 summit to approach $1 billion. You're spending $1 billion on security for this against us. See how they treat us? This is terrible. The Sun murdered Asian loan shark in a barrel. Good Lord. Or SATC2 will break fangirl hearts. Some sort of tabloidy nonsense. National Post, health workers at high risk for E. coli superbug, says a study. Now, keep in mind here, folks, that the feds, based on the vaccine issue and many others, don't necessarily want us healthy. And so we've got to understand how to get healthy and how to understand the world better in order to take action on these issues. You can burn DVDs. You can pass out flyers. You can get together in little groups. Personally, I know from my own efforts, in running. Oh, and by the way, George Smitherman was the Ontario Minister of Health during the launch of Gardasil here in Ontario. So, if you do understand how dangerous that vaccine is, be sure to hold that against Gardasil George as he's out there trying to drum up votes. For my own political aspirations, I honestly want to just deal with groups of people who tell me what they want. And so I recommend you start looking at yourself as groups of people so you can figure out, what your common interests are, how what we're being given differs from those, and how you can work together in those groups and with other groups and for other groups and causes and so on to affect change. But again, flyers, DVDs, pass them on. Pass out vran.org so that people do know about vaccine exemption forms. Big Pharmacide's planning a whole bunch more. And again, they're trying to give you drugs before you're even sick. So it's an amazing scam. You don't want cancer? Take this vaccine. You want to get depressed? Take this vaccine. You don't want diabetes? Take this vaccine. You don't want this? Take this vaccine. And for everything out there, they'll develop some sort of vaccine, which may or may not work. Alex Jones was on Russia Today talking about the Canadian conspiracy, how Harper's administration has been caught sending trolls in to infiltrate message boards at political message boards and groups here in Canada. A small slice of that has been exposed by Ottawa AM 1130. Talked about that yesterday. You can go to Infowars.com for a bit more on that. Here on the end of the show, as Mr. Gaskin is ready to take over, I'd like to definitely shout out a few websites for you to check. Infowars.com, naturalnews.com, trendsresearch.com, cuttingthroughthematrix.com, henrymakow.com, and locally, torontotruthseekers.com. Should be out in the streets this Saturday, again, activizing against the G20. We got a meetup. Check us out, 370 members strong and still growing, working out what we want to do. But I think everybody on Earth is right now, as things look really uncertain and dangerous. Hey, that's perfectly normal. PressForTruth.ca, amazing journalism company here in Toronto. ConspiracyCulture.com, great book and DVD store, Queen and Roncesvalles. Tons and tons of great places here in Toronto. Toronto Street News, great paper out there for you to pick up just walking around the streets of Toronto. I'm out of here, folks. It's been the 26th of May, 2010. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. Hopefully you will share some of this information. And hopefully you will improve someone else's life. And hopefully you will improve someone else's life by doing so. And hopefully on future shows, I stick the landing. Peace out, everybody.
This is CKLN 88.1 FM, licensed by the Canadian Radio, Television and Telecommunications Commission to broadcast in stereo at 88.1 MHz on the FM band. CKLN is owned and operated by CKLN Radio Incorporated, which is located at Ryerson University within the Student Campus Center in Toronto, Canada.
At the time of license application, CKLN filed a comprehensive promise of performance with the Commission, and within that document made specific commitments to its operations and programming. The license issued by the CRTC requires CKLN to honor these commitments made in the promise of performance and to comply with the FM radio broadcasting regulations.
A copy of the license with the promise of performance and conditions of licensing is available for inspection by any member of the public at the offices of the Commission and at the offices of CKLN during business hours. Radio frequencies are public property in Canada. CKLN invites your comments and inquiries.
Our mailing address is 55 Gould Street, Toronto, Ontario, postal code M5B1E9, phone number 416-979-5251.
Thank you for tuning in to CKLN 88.1 FM, and good morning.